everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John. John engineering and producing our program on the other side of the glass. It is the Buckmaster Show. That's me. It's Thursday, February the 8th, 2024. We're in our 14th year with the radio projects. 36 years now in Tucson Media. We are in the Bustos Media, well, complex, where we have five radio stations under one roof. This one's 1030 KVOI, The Voice, and we're in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio. We are now the only local source for on radio for local news and talk. We're worldwide live listening. You can find it on my website, buckmastershow.com, and my assistant, Rosemary Brandt, is very great about getting our podcast posted. Usually by dinner time, they're up from today's show. And our live line for our telephone interview is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Rex Scott is the Democrat representative from the first Pima County Supervisorial District. There are five districts on the Pima County Board of Supervisors. Supervisor Scott was elected in 2020. He is standing for re-election. He's being primaried by a 20-year-old UA student, Jake Martin. First of all, good to see you, Supervisor. How are you?
Bill, it's great to be here with you and John and all your listeners. Thanks for this monthly opportunity.
And this young man has actually reached out to you.
You know, we met shortly after he formed a nonprofit foundation, and then that benefits sexual assault victims. And then I didn't hear anything further from him until he filed a statement of interest to run in the Democratic primary for the nomination in District 1. And we've had a couple of conversations about how primaries are family fights, and they need to be conducted in a way that's focused on the issues and the role of the board and the role of supervisors, not on anything personal or negative. And I have every confidence that we're going to keep our commitments to each other.
And there is no age limit to run. He's 20 years old. I guess there's no age limit to run for Pima County Supervisor.
That's correct. The only requirements are that you be 18 years of age and a registered voter in our district.
Let's talk about something that's very close to your heart. It's the program known as RTA Next, the Regional Transportation Authority, and it's called Next because it's hoped that this will be the successor to the 20-year program, which will be sunsetting in a couple of years. What's the latest on RTA Next?
Well, we had the last meeting of the RTA board late last month. I believe it was on January 25th. And we talked at that meeting about three different plans. The two plans that the Citizens Advisory Committee had forwarded to us, and then also a modified plan that the Technical Management Committee had also forwarded to us. We agreed that we were no longer going to be discussing one of the two CAC-forwarded plans. That is Plan 5.1. And so moving forward, we're only going to be talking about CAC Plan 4.2 and also the Technical Management Committee modified plan. And again, that was a unanimous decision by the board. We also are going to be adding two new meetings to our schedule. We were scheduled to meet in both March and May, but now we have added meetings in February and April, and that's because all of us want to get an RTA Next plan through our board so that it can go out for the public review period that should take up most of the second half of this calendar year.
Tim Tomier was on our program. Tim is the assistant city manager and probably will be stepping in at least in the interim when city manager Mike Ortega steps aside. And that could happen. Steve Kasachek, councilman, was on the show yesterday. Mike Ortega could step aside after he presents the funding package in April. So Tim may be running the show at least for a while. And I know he would like, well, he's expected to want to step in full time to the position of Mr. Ortega. And he said on our program a couple of weeks ago that he's encouraged by what's coming out of RTA next.
And I listened to that interview with Mr. Tomier, and what he was referring to when he expressed that sense of optimism to you was that TMC modified plan that was passed by the Technical Management Committee, which is made up of all of the jurisdictional professionals that advise the RTA board. And there are three representatives from the city of Tucson on the Technical Management Committee. There are two representatives from the county, and then all the other jurisdictions have one representative each. And they passed that plan, or I should say forwarded that plan to us by a unanimous vote. But when the board was talking at the end of January, we really feel that there are still issues of concern to many of our members that need to be addressed in greater detail. Some of those issues have to do with, for example, the named projects that are in the active transportation and safety elements in the TMC modified plan. Several of the members expressed concern that there was no money left over for projects that might be added other than those named projects. There also were concerns expressed about the amount of money that the plan called for with regard to allowing for bonding or to set aside funds for contingency. There were concerns about whether or not the amount for transit was sufficient, and whether or not all of the named corridor projects had been covered. So just a lot of different topics that members want to first discuss with their staffs and then come back and discuss as an RTA board. But again, I don't think we would have added two additional meetings were there not a sense of urgency on the part of all nine of us to find that common ground that we've been able to find before. But now it's even more essential that we find that common ground so that we can get an RTA next plan out for the public review period.
Yeah, if the city was going to walk, in other words, the bluster that this is not what the city wants, Mayor Romero wouldn't have signed on to even these additional meetings, would she?
I don't believe any of us would, including Mayor Romero. And Mayor Romero has said many times, as have all of us, that she's a believer in regionalism and collaboration. And she's also said at one of our meetings that she sees what could be accomplished with RTA Next as a way of complementing what the city's going to be doing with the revenue that they get from the recently passed Proposition 411.
With projects that will not be completed in the 20-year period, they will still be completed, correct?
Bill, if you're referring...
And that's an important point that needs to be discussed.
No question. And if you're referring to the four projects that were part of the original RTA plan...
Yes.
Yes, they will be addressed first under RTA Next. And even if RTA Next doesn't pass, the entire board is committed to using... a combination of local and funds, local funds and federal and state funds that come into the region to ensure that all four of those projects are completed. Our commitment to the voters is that the entire 2006 plan will be completed, even if RTA Next is not passed. But I want to reiterate something that's been said on this show, not just by me, but by General Maxwell, who is, by the way, the new chair of the RTA board. That there is not going to be any federal and state funding coming into this region for anything other than maintenance. And so if we don't pass an RTA Next plan for the next 20-year period, we are going to be a world of hurt, in a world of hurt in terms of meeting all of our infrastructure needs throughout this region.
And General Maxwell is the representative for the Arizona Department of Transportation. He is one of nine members on the RTA board, and now he, as you point out, he is now the chair
Correct.
Of the RTA, and he will be a guest here in the next week or so. All right, let's pause right here before we change topics with Rex Scott, Pima County Supervisor representing the district that I live in. That is District 1. It's also the district where Mona's Danish Bakery is located, and there's really exciting news up at Mona's. There's a real buzz up there. People... Maybe that was the wrong term, right? Because they have the liquor license now. Pima County has granted Steve and the team a liquor license, so everything's good to go and is going. They have the champagne. They've got the wine products. They are doing a beer. I was up there over the weekend. I think it's a beer called Peroni, which is out of Italy, has a pretty good reputation. So they're not only, you know, of course, doing the breakfast starting at 6:30 in the morning, but then with lunch, you could have some wine, or for your breakfast, you could have the orange juice and champagne, the mimosa. Check it out. Mona's Danish Bakery, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Their website is monasdanishbakery.com. More with Rex Scott after we take a break. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Whether you've considered an all-inclusive luxury cruise, an expedition adventure, or a relaxing river cruise, come to Bon Voyage Travel's annual showcase on March 3rd at the Hilton El Conquistador. Presentations will be offered throughout the day to provide you a chance to hear more about these travel brands and their exciting offers. Bill Buckmaster and I will be teaming up to present the travel trends of 2024. Visit bvtravel.com for more information on Bon Voyage Travel's free showcase on March 3rd.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Once a month, we have Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott join us either in studio or on our live line, which is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. This month, Supervisor Scott is in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studios, with me. Let's move on to the topic of the migrant services issue. And how does the Senate now saying no to the border security protection bill, will that impact resources here in Pima County to handle migrant services?
It won't impact those funds that we get from the federal government to help pay for the costs of asylum seekers who, after they're released by Customs and Border Patrol, are in our community for roughly 48 to 72 hours. But I think the Senate missed an extraordinary opportunity. This was a collaborative effort by a Republican, Jim Lankford from Oklahoma, a Democrat, Chris Murphy from Connecticut, and an independent, Kyrsten Sinema from here in Arizona. And there were a lot of elements in this package that were very much supported, advocated for by Republican members of both the House and Senate for many years. But because of the outright opposition by former President Trump and the concern by members of his party in both those houses to do anything that that offends him or is in opposition to him, the deal fell apart. And I think it was a missed opportunity.
Even the Border Patrol Association signed off on this thing. They liked it. And this was a golden opportunity. This is the first time anything comprehensive. And when do you have nonpartisan kind of across the aisle cooperation anymore? You just don't have it. It's 40 years since there's been anything, at least.
And even like longer this. Since the last time laws dealing with the asylum-seeking process were addressed. I think the last time that was addressed was 1980. Mm-hmm. But Congress and successive administrations have failed to take on this issue, and it is always comes down to selfishness and people's individual political priorities. Not just this time, but back during the Obama administration, which was the last opportunity that we had to really take on necessary reforms to our immigration system and the laws that govern it.
What do the daily numbers look like with migrants coming through our area?
Well, they've gone down a bit, which is expected around the holidays, but we're still dealing with I believe well over 1,100 or 1,200 a day.
And luckily we've got some services, people that volunteer, a lot of people that volunteer to kind of keep this thing rolling.
We do. And if you look at the fact that in other border communities throughout this country, San Antonio, El Paso, San Diego, you have seen street releases in those cities. The reason we've been able to avoid that in Tucson and Pima County is because of the concerted efforts by the county, by our partners, especially the city of Tucson, and by Catholic Community Services, which runs Casa Litas. And again, none of us are in favor of using local funds to pay for the impacts of federal immigration policy. So these funds are at risk of running out at the middle or end of April, best case scenario. So once again, we need to prevail upon our members of the House and Senate to make sure that that doesn't happen, because although there are differences within the Board of Supervisors about making use of these federal funds, there are no differences among the five of us about the fact that we do not want to use local funds to pay for something that is a federal responsibility.
You're a former educator. I guess if somebody's been in the education field, you're really an educator for life.
No question.
And you have been going to different schools in District 1 this month because it is a love of reading month. It promotes literacy. You're reading to the kids. How's it feel to be back in a classroom?
It always feels great to be in a classroom, Bill. I am not only a career educator, but I'm the son of an educator. My father was a college professor. I am married to a career educator, and one of our two children is an educator. So it means a great deal to me to get into schools. These are usually elementary schools where I go to read to kids during February, which is Love of Reading Month. I know that Supervisor Grijalva gets into elementary schools in her district as well, and my other colleagues might. I'm just familiar with her efforts. But beyond getting into elementary schools to read to kids during Love of Reading, I like getting into schools of all ages. It's usually middle and high schools to talk with them about county government and the impact it plays on their lives. I was just at a high school yesterday, and I've got another high school scheduled next month, and it always energizes me and gives me great joy to be back in a school setting for any reason.
And what type of literature do you share with the young people?
Well, usually, kids have favorite books.
Yes.
And so more often than not, when I go to an elementary school, the teacher has books ready for me that are favorites of their kids. For example,
some of the illustrated type books for the children, or are these?
It depends on the age.
Okay.
So I was up at a school in District 1 last week, and I read to four different fourth grade classes. And the teacher had four different books picked for me, one for each class, and they were tied in with content that the students were studying. There was a really funny book called The Math Curse, which was about this kid who just kept seeing math at play in so many different aspects of his daily life. And there was another one called Dear Deer, which was
Deer,
a book of...
Deer.
Yes, D-E-A-R,
and then
D-E-E-R.
The
it
animal.
Was a book about homophones. Words that sound the same but are spelled differently and mean different things. And Dear Deer was writing to Ant.
Huh. Yeah, you mentioned Supervisor Chair Adelita Grijalva doing also reading to kids, but I noticed on her Facebook page that she's also taken one of her children over to Pima Animal Care Center, and they have a wonderful program over there. And by the way, the director, Monica Dangler, I believe does a great job. She'll be with me on Monday's show. But Adelita brought one of her children to take part in this program where people read to the animals.
Wow.
To the stray dogs and everything. And she had posted some pictures. And I know Monica has felt that when people do this, it just calms the animal down. You know, hearing a voice, I'm sure it's pretty much about a voice, just sort of a soothing voice to the animal. But I think that's a great program at that.
I didn't know about it, but it doesn't surprise me. I mean, when you read to kids of any age, they just have this look of contentment on their faces while you're doing so, and the fact that you'd see similar effects on animals is no surprise.
Now, what about daycare for kids or early learning? We haven't talked about that in months. Can you give us an update?
Bill, that program, which provides scholarships to low-income families who want to send their kids to preschool, is absolutely thriving. We were able to assist 900 students the first year, 1,400 students the second year, and this year it's going to be right around 1,600 kids. The scholarships don't go to the families. They go to the preschool providers, and the preschool providers are within the K-12 districts and also in the private sector. And then we have a program that is run through the United Way called Accelerate Quality. And that is working with preschool providers to help them to meet the standards that are set by the state of Arizona for preschools in this state. So we've been able to expand preschool capacity through that program sponsored by Your United Way. And one of the things that I find most compelling is that in the Amphitheater School District, They now have preschools on two of their high school campuses at Ironwood Ridge High School and Canyon del Oro High School. Mm. And that not only provides preschool for children of parents who bring them to those preschools, but there are also early childhood education classes offered through the Joint Technological Education District that operates on both those campuses. So you have high school students who are coming into these preschool classes on their campuses as a way of advancing their own education. And these are kids, these high school kids, who may eventually be preschool or elementary school teachers. And it just is, it's
sounds
extraordinary.
Like a win-win situation.
It's fantastic.
First I have heard of that. And that's why I do this program. I do the program so I learn something every day. I'm not just here to hear what the guests have to say. Of course, that's the kind of the primary motive, but I want to learn as well. I'm a lifelong learning learner, Rex Scott. Every day you learn something new, or at least I try to.
No question about it.
You now have your, I mentioned you're standing for re-election. Did you put up a re-election website?
I did. And thank you for asking about that. If people go to scott4supervisor.com, and that is Scott, the number 4, supervisor.com, they will find our re-election website, and I'd be deeply honored to have another term representing the people of District 1.
Thank you very much, Rex Scott.
My
pleasure. Good to see you. Coming up next, a fine young man who's very much a one-time homeless, or as they say, houseless individual. His name's Sam Nagy, and he's really taken on this whole homeless issue, and he's got an operation where they're trying to build a mobile shower laundry trailer program. And he's got a program called Cloud Covered Streets. We'll learn about that right after this.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for Marketplace Trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Perfect time of year. Spring is coming, and we're having great rain that's going to make all the plants at Green Things. Not only has it made them happy, they're ready to go home with you. 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, the 13-acre site chock full of everything you need for the garden. And Zocalo Village, the sister business, the beautiful pottery, the items, the accessories, the imports from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com. When we do our telephone interviews, our live lines presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, I want to introduce the Buckmaster Show listeners to a fine young man. His name is Sam Nagy. Sam, I first met him when he ran for the city council office in 2019. Sam has a very interesting background. He was homeless from 2003 to 2006 for 3 years. He overcame a major drug and alcohol addiction. He's been clean and sober for 17 years. He's employed at the Miracle Center, the Gap Ministries, as a program coordinator for a career and life development program. But what we're going to talk about today is something called Cloud-Covered Streets. It's a program that is we're trying to build a mobile shower laundry trailer program. And Sam is the Tucson Operations Manager. Sam, thanks for being with us. Good to see you.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Bill, so much.
Tell me about the program. How did this program, Cloud Covered Streets, and by the way, I like that name. It's very, I think it rings very true to what you're trying to do. Go ahead, please.
Absolutely, yes. We have a rare opportunity in this city of Tucson to collaborate with the community and also with the folks that are experiencing homelessness here in the city. Cloud Covered Streets has a very large following and background and heritage within Arizona and also Texas. Phoenix was the original site back in May of 2016. Robert Thornton is our founder and CEO. Such a great opportunity. We got to volunteer for this program and see everything that is happening and just a glimpse, actually, what's going on.
You do have vans now, what, in Phoenix and in San Antonio? Is that right?
Yes, there are three-door trailers. There one stall is laundry shower units, and the other two are showers. One's ADA regulated and compliant. One's in Fort Worth. One's operational in Phoenix.
There is a cost. We're talking $80,000, right?
That's our yeah. goal. That's what we're raising money for. Yes, sir.
Tell me about how the mobile unit works. What services would be available, Sam?
It's really amazing. It's a collaboration between showers, laundry, cleanliness, hygiene, clean clothes, and also haircuts.
Really?
Yes, sir.
Mobile barber.
Mobile barbers. Yeah, yes, sir. It's quite an amazing thing, Mr. Buckmaster.
And so you've seen these units in action.
Yes.
And now going back to your own experience with homelessness, I suppose there was rarely kind of a safe place, Sam Nagy, to wash up and shower.
Correct. Yeah. It was very challenging to, even to today, the status of the accessibility for showers and laundry is scarce, especially things that would come to the individual, meet people where they're at.
And I know you talk to many homeless people, and this is a concern. I mean, if they've got a job interview or they need to clean up, what are they going to do?
Absolutely. There's a waiting list traditionally. There's reservations people have to make to and then have money for the services at times. And not everything costs money. But we are a free service, a nonprofit, Cloud Covered Streets. And super excited about being here in Tucson and unveiling and launching this program.
How can people get involved?
please email me, sam@cloudcoveredstreets.org. You can also go online to our social media platforms, Instagram @CCS_Tucson, and our Facebook page, Cloud Covered Streets-Tucson. And we also have a website, www.cloudcoveredstreets.org.
You've also done work with trying to help homeless with a sock donation. How did that outreach go, Sam Nagy?
Yeah, about 2014 was when I was put on the map, if you will. In fact, a local news agency here in town published me and brought it live to the community. But it's been 10 years. I've been handing out over 4,000 pairs of socks.
Wow. That's something that is very needed, right, for people on the street?
Yeah, for sure. Clean clothing, clean socks, clean anything is very well received.
What's your take on the – I know they did a census on homelessness recently, the first one that was done since the pandemic. What's your take? You're out there talking and know what's going on the street. What's your feeling?
You know, nobody wakes up and decides, well, I'm just going to be homeless today or be a person experiencing homelessness or being unhoused. It's really challenging to just, you know, somebody tell the person, well, just go get a job or go clean up or whatever, stop using substances or whatever the case may be. And so I think really the support from Cloud Covered Streets and the city of Tucson and Pima County is going to be huge.
I do want to point out, Sam, and you were awarded a 40 Under 40 Award in 2015 from the Arizona Daily Star and the Tucson Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. How did you wind up being homeless? How did you wind up on the streets?
You know, it really was accumulation of things and kind of a slow fade. And eventually I was asked to leave my house where my parents were, and I was asked to not come back because of all the problems I was causing. In 2006 is when I decided that I was going to use drugs and not, you know, manage my life well. And then progressively it just kept getting worse, in and out of jails, institutions. I racked up 15 different arrests.
Wow.
Over the course of my, being homeless career.
Mm. So how did, what kind of a drug and alcohol addiction did you have, and how were you able to get clean and sober?
I was introduced to crack cocaine and alcohol and marijuana when I was early on in my life and struggled with that in my 20s and just couldn't stay out of the institutions. I was at Keno Hospital, now the formerly known as Keno. It's now the CRC, Crisis Response Center, and just, you know, totally without any type of vision or foresight over into my recovery and staying well.
Well, you're certainly to be commended. You've turned your life around. You married and got a beautiful wife. You married in 2011. I understand now you're a homeowner, correct?
Yes.
You bought a home?
Yes. One of my phrases was from homeless to homeowner.
And that happened. And how's that going for you?
You know, it's really going well. We just tiled the floors. I did some really extensive work in the backyard to support this Ramada. I mean, I'm sharing that because I really love where I live.
Mm-hmm.
And we just adopted a daughter. She was in her teens and now she's 18. And me and my wife are really working well together to manage our home.
Getting back to the trailer, the mobile shower and laundry trailer, all you'll need is once you get the unit, when you do roll up to a location, you'll need a water hookup, and hopefully there'll be barber and barber stylists who would be willing to volunteer to also help, correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Studio U is a huge support with Patty Jimenez. She's looking to do an event coming up on March 3rd, cultivating the local barber and stylist community together. We're fundraising money and gathering funds for our supplies that will operate on the shower unit.
All right. Again, before we let you go, Sam Nagy, give our listeners some information about Cloud Covered Streets and how they can help.
Please email me, sam@cloudcoveredstreets.org. You can also check out our website at www.cloudcoveredstreets.org. And really, you know, by donating finances right now, we're trying to raise $80,000. That's our biggest tackle, our biggest hurdle to tackle at this point. But Facebook as well, Instagram, @CCS_Tucson.
And you can put this interview up on your website, too.
Absolutely.
I give you permission. There you go. You can put this interview up because I think this is a good thing. I think Cloud Covered Streets, which is an Arizona nonprofit, it's a 501c, and I think that you guys are doing great work, and congratulations on your lifestyle and how you turn things around.
Thank you, sir. I really enjoyed being here today.
Thank you very much. Sam Nagy with us. Coming up next, historian Ken Scoville. Big day at Fort Lowell Park coming up. We'll tell our listeners about that on the Buckmaster Show.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary. Home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, and we want to tell our listeners about Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson, their website, southwestnewmexico.org, for all the information about, oh my gosh, so many tempting outdoor activities, beautiful time of year over in the Gila National Wilderness, and there's great places to stay, to eat. It's got it made. Check it out, Silver City, only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson. Tomorrow on our Friday Focus interview, Leah Marquez Peterson from the Arizona Corporation Commission will be with us talking about our power supply and how the grid is holding up this winter. Our live line for our telephone interview is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line to historian Ken Scoville. Ken, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine, and it's good to see a nice sunny day again.
Yeah, it is. We're having quite the moist winter right now, and hopefully that has not impacted your series of walking tours at Fort Lowell Park.
No, I do it twice a month on Mondays, and we sort of readjust for the weather, and people seem pretty good about bumping to the next week or the next day, so we're doing fine.
Fort Lowell Day is coming up. Will you be involved February 24th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m.?
Yes, I will. I will be a site host at the commissary and explaining the importance of the commissary building. In fact, that was probably the major focus for Fort Lowell, as the supplies would come to Fort Lowell, and then they would distribute to all the other forts in southern Arizona during the Apache Indian Wars.
Was Fort Lowell at one time a very important fort for the United States?
Well, it was the, and again, realizing that supplies would be coming from the Gulf of California, from San Diego, and people would, boats would go up that way or across the desert to get to Yuma, and then Yuma, the final trek to Fort Lowell, and then Fort Lowell was supposed to then distribute the supplies to all the other forts. So Fort Lowell played a critical role, maybe not as much direct engagement in the Apaches, but as we know, any kind of military campaign, supplies, logistics are extremely important.
How is Fort Lowell doing today? I know there is a designation, correct?
Yeah, well, back in the early 1970s, as a backlash to urban renewal, we had five historic preservation zones, and Fort Lowell being one, and the only rural setting. All the other ones are more of an urban setting, but a rural setting. And so that gives greater level of protections, and if somebody wants to do a demolition, it can always be appealed to the mayor and council, where it also has listings in the National Register to provide a certain amount of tax benefits and recognition. But it's the historic preservation zone that really adds a level of protection.
Let's back up. Location, location, location. That's what they say when it comes to real estate. What about Fort Lowell? Why was that particular area on the current day Craycroft, just north of Grant? Why was that location originally chosen, Ken?
Well, it's always about the water. And because of you, and this is an interesting month, if you noticed on the Rincons, all the snow that's been up there. And as that snow would melt, follows it down through the drainage patterns to feed the Tanque Verde and the Pantano. And when they converge to form the Rito, that is a great aquifer of water at one time. The water tables drop in a huge corridor of cottonwoods. But this was always identified a place from prehistoric Hohokam at the turn of the, 2,000 years ago, all the way up to all the different people that have been there, that this was a place where there was water for agriculture, diverting the water. But even that situation was sporadic at times, especially in the summer. But the military realized when they had to leave Camp Low from downtown because the soldiers were getting drunk and too many diversions in one area of early territorial Tucson. So they move out in 1874, and that location was the place with the most water.
So did the townspeople in 1874, did they say, you guys got to get out of downtown, the military?
Well, it's actually late 1873, but it was like, you get drunk and you end up shooting some of our dogs, even though we didn't have a big problem. I was shooting windows out.
That's horrible.
And we had one area which was the Tenderloin or Red Light District. So all those diversions would cause them to move out of town. But the relationship between downtown Tucson and the military actually got stronger at Fort Lowell. There were concerts and picnics, and people did a lot of trips back and forth, not only for the hospital situation, but also for the social life. And I don't think people realized the forts had baseball teams, and they tried to have a life, and especially Fort Lowell, which I'm assuming was a pretty good assignment, lots of families with children.
And was there quite a bit of the building itself, the construction, was it adobe mainly?
Oh, Fort Lowell, again, realizing 1874, it was all adobe. And then after the rival and flat roofs, after the railroad in 1880, then they would get pitched roofs and sort of a veranda and covered areas to try and provide a better area for sleeping outside. In fact, there's a wonderful book, Vanished to Arizona, by Martha Summerhays. And they talk about trying to plant some ocotillo, the ribs, to sort of screen the outside sleeping areas for the women and the wives, so they felt a little more comfortable, had a little level of privacy. So it was a real interrelationship and changes by, obviously, the materials and the arrival of the railroad.
There was quite a bit of farming, wasn't there, from Mexican citizens?
Well, after some early Mexican ranchers in Creole, which we think of as the Tango Verde Desk Ranch today, so we're some of that. But once the fort left in 1891, now we would have Mexican farmers coming up more so from Mexico and having a major cultivated fields because of the water. And then the other thing a lot of people don't realize, Sabino Canyon was called Chili Flats because chilies grew very well. And then they would actually dry. They weren't trying to think of an ornament, but they would dry the chilies on the sides of the walls. And there's nice, very interesting pictures of that. So the farming continued to about the middle 1940s when the water table was really drastically dropping. And also city of Tucson was starting to encroach on this really relatively rural area.
And the fort, when it closed in 1891, that would have been a really big hit, I would think, for this region.
Well, you realize over the next 10 years from 1891, a third of our population left because they just couldn't make it. We were having a real hot, dry spell. And then there were also economic issues nationally because of the overbuilding of the railroad and the collapse financially. And collapses in the old days, they were always called panics. Later, we called them the depressions, and now they're recessions. So, but the same issues were involved. But the farming community gave way a little bit to, or overlapping, with some very interesting artists from Holland, and they came out and restored a lot of the early military buildings and a trading post. So, and then eventually, we would have anthropologists move out, and those groups and traditions brought the preservation movement to Fort Lowell.
The group from Holland, was it a couple or was it?
Was it a husband and wife and a brother, Pete and Ann and Charles Bolsius.
Huh.
And they built several homes in the area, but they did wonderful preservation of the commissary and what was the trader's post, which was moved out and was built just at the time that the fort moved out there to provide, liquid refreshments. And then the military bought it out and it became sort of a enlisted and officers' card games, a little bit of intoxicants, but certainly with restrictions.
At Fort Lowell Day, one of the showcase places for folks to go will be the really restored, revitalized Fort Lowell Museum, correct?
Correct, yes. So I think people need to realize that that's a 1962 reconstruction of officers' quarters. And that served as a really interpretive museum for decades. And then it closed because of the Historical Society issues. And now the Presidio Museum is doing a wonderful job, just like they did downtown. And that's the focal point interpretive museum. But then if you want to see the actual three remaining 1873 officers' quarters, they are on the other side of Craycroft, the west side. And I'm sure they will be open on the 24th. Among them will be cavalry drills. Flag-raising ceremony begins at noon, and don't want to miss the cannon demonstration, so you always get to jump up in the air a little bit. But there'll be music, and there's a concert band of the era there, so it's a major event, along with the reunion tour with historic sites throughout the neighborhood and down Fort Lowell Road westward.
The San Pedro Chapel, will it be open that day?
It will be open, and it's sort of the heart and the community of the El Fuerte, the Mexican farming community, and for the historic district today. It's a wonderful, wonderful preserved chapel on very significant hilltop with great views of the Catalinas. And there'll be information if you want to buy more books or things about the Fort Lowell district.
Where can people, or how about your particular event, your walking tour that day? What time will it be, Ken Scoville?
Okay, I am not doing a tour that day, but they can go on to the Presidio Museum, and you can click on tours for the Presidio Museum in the Presidio area, which I also do for them, and then you can click on also for Fort Lowell and see the schedule of tours. But typically, I do two Mondays a month, sort of rotating every two weeks on Mondays if they want to do a Fort Lowell walk, where we will look at Fort Lowell in perspective as the history of Arizona. Because the military is just one of many stories of life on that portion of the desert.
All right. Ken Scoville, always a pleasure. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you very much.
All right. Ken Scoville, historian on The Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Ken and John, engineering, producing, I'm Bill. Hope everybody has a great afternoon.